Off the Ball. GAA.
Hurling traditions, obviously, will maybe smile at that. Kilkenny beat Kildare, but this is a different Kildare. This is a Kildare built on real confidence, real hurling, real belief.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Welcome to Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. It's John Duggan with you through to 7. Thank you for tuning in. Hope you're enjoying the beautiful sunshine. What's coming up on the show over the next 6 hours on your radio? Well, the final day of the Premier League season's upon us. 10 games kicking off at 4. Champions Arsenal will be presented with the trophy. First time in 22 years after their match at Crystal Palace. We're going to showcase live and exclusive commentary of the game between Tottenham Hotspur and Everton. Phil Egan and Owen Doyle will describe the action as Spurs look to secure the point that will keep them up. If they lose, it opens the door for West Ham. Our final day coverage begins with a special Football Sunday from 2 with the Irish centurion Kevin Kilbane, live from Canada, and Johnny Ward as well. We've also got Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr on hand from 3 to recap the season. They're at the Brighton-Manchester United game this afternoon. The round-robin phase of the Munster and Leinster Hurling Championships concludes today. We'll be across all developments. We'll also bring you the best of the Sunday pay-per-view before we go off air at 7 p.m. And the presenter of the Sunday pay-per-view, Adrian Barry and Shane Hannan, join me for the news round. Good afternoon, gents.
John, Shane.
Afternoon, lads.
All well?
We're flying it.
Very good.
There's too much to get into, I think.
Main story yesterday, a 41-19 win for Bordeaux over Irish province Leinster in the Investec Champions Cup final in Bilbao. We'll hear from Leo Cullen later in the news round. The main story today, Shane, before we get into all the GAA ruckus, is the Premier League's conclusion. Arsenal getting the hands on the silverware. And goodbye to Mo, goodbye to Pep.
And goodbye to one of Spurs or West Ham, John.
Yes, yes.
I don't want to bring it up, but the Premier League relegation battle has gone down to the final day. West Ham need to beat Leeds United to have any chance of survival today. However, Tottenham 2 points ahead of them with a superior goal difference, and a draw for Roberto De Zerbi's side will be enough for them to stay in the top flight. They take on Everton, as we said. That's our live game later on this afternoon. All games in the Premier League today kicking off at the same time of 4 o'clock. There is also European places. There are, in fact, European places up for grabs this afternoon. Brighton welcome Manchester United. Brentford visit Liverpool. Chelsea are up against Sunderland. Bournemouth clash with Nottingham Forest. And Aston Villa take on Manchester City. That game, of course, will also be Pep Guardiola's last in charge after a decade in the dugout for City. Elsewhere, as you mentioned, Crystal Palace up against the champions Arsenal. Fulham take on Newcastle, while a win for Wolves over Burnley will take them off the bottom of the table. While yesterday, of course, Hull City secure their place back in the Premier League for next season for the first time in 9 years after scoring a dramatic late winner to beat Middlesbrough 1-0 in the Championship playoff final. Ollie McBurnie, who's been left out of Scotland's World Cup squad, struck in the 95th minute at Wembley. Borough failed to capitalise on being reinstated to the competition after Southampton were kicked out for Spygate. So it's a busy, busy one in football today, John. I don't know if you want to address the elephant in the room and the fact that you're a Tottenham Hotspur fan.
I sat on an elephant once in Thailand.
There you go. See how much he doesn't want to talk about it.
Go on, JD, give us a half hour on that. That's what people want.
It didn't fall off anyway. In 2017, Tottenham got 86 points in the Premier League. That is more than Arsenal can achieve this season. If they beat Palace today, they'll be on 85 for this season. That's how bad it's got for Tottenham Hotspur. I remember I went to university and I did a business project on how badly or things went for Radio Ireland, and just the failure of Radio Ireland before, and I'm sure the great people worked there before, it was transformed into Today FM, which became this incredible success. And just the business case. There's a university business case on Tottenham Hotspur's decline and failure over the last few years. It's staggering. They were 6 years in a row ahead of Arsenal between 17 and 22 in the Premier League. And as I said, 86 points in 2017. And now they're clinging on for the second season in a row, 17th in the league at the moment. So, but I do like Roberto De Zerbi. I do worry, though, if they concede first against Everton, and that could give West Ham hope, and then it's get out the transistor radio, isn't it?
Yeah. The thing people often talk about, like management, but I think it applies to a club in general as well, is whether they're getting the most out of some of their parts, which, like, just a succession of Tottenham managers have not been able to do. Maybe De Zerbi's about as close as it gets. They shouldn't be relegation fodder, that's for sure.
No, not at all.
When you step back, what's the out of the weeds of, you know, a bad manager here or there? And
just bad stewardship from the board. Daniel Levy had too much control. All the focus went into the stadium, the training ground, the business side of it. They're ninth in the Deloitte Money League, which I know that every young child would want the trophy on their mantelpiece to say they were ninth in the Deloitte Money League. But I've been reading a lot about Arsenal this week and Arteta and the Cronkies and how they did it. And with all successes, you get the articles, the long form pieces, the 10-minute pieces. But there was a plan. There's a plan around the football, and they prioritised the football, and they prioritised, how are we going to get a great scouting structure here? When are Liverpool and Manchester City going to go down in their graph? And how can we capitalise with young talent and spending money and having the right scouts and the right culture? And I never felt reading the pieces about Arsenal this week that the business was ever mentioned. Whereas at Tottenham, the business has always been first. Mm. That is the really high season ticket prices. That's the Beyonce concerts. Mm. That's the NFL. That's the go-karting. And the football, they have had no idea of how to run the football side, or they haven't employed people to run the football side well. That's why they are the way they are. And the culture of the club is rotten, in that you've got Cristiano Ronaldo, the captain, is actually in Argentina today.
It's actually unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
There is talk on social media today that he's had a turnaround in his views, and that he's been spotted in London.
Can I just say on that, even if it's true, that is still, that fact that he would need to have a turnaround.
Yeah.
Like, you could be in that dressing room beforehand. Like, you could actually, so he's gone to support
his
boyhood club, who he played for when he was a kid and all that sort of stuff. All good. But you could actually be in that Tottenham dressing room going, lads, today is the day. Now, listen, no body of evidence suggests that there's any player in that dressing room who's said those words at any point over the last year. I mean, as you say, JD, it feels like as if something quite rotten at the core of the entire thing, and possibly the words of Cristiano Ronaldo are not going to be the
thing. Him being injured could keep Tottenham up.
Right, yeah.
He got injured against Sunderland, but him being injured could keep Spurs up, mm-hmm. because I think it's that toxic. And Madison's come in there, and he's just gone, this is not good enough, folks. And you might be able to get 20 minutes out of him today. I think De Zerbi's been great. I think Richarlison's fought. I think that gives them hope. But they haven't won a game at home in 2026.
Mark.
And I apologise now in advance.
In the league, that is.
I apologise in advance.
Go on. They're going down.
I'd rather they went down than West Ham.
Why?
Because West Ham have at least showed a pair. At least West Ham have showed some cojones, right?
Leroy G.
They have showed a lot of Leroy G. In a way that they don't look like a team who should be down there, whereas Tottenham do.
Once again, bad leadership from the board. That sold a stadium.
Yeah. But can I put it to you?
What was wrong with David Moyes at West Ham? They won a European trophy. Yeah. They were in the top 10 in the Premier League. What's not to like?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, at fans are fickle. And that's
but it's more the grass is never greener on the other side. But Tottenham,
But can I put it to you, JD, right? That, so I've referenced this a bit for people who are regular listeners, but I have seen Tottenham in the flesh this season, and they were so dull and unimpressive. The word I used previously, and I'll stand over it, was pathetic. This was New Year's Day.
The Brentford game, was it?
Yeah, New Year's Day, evening kickoff. It wasn't as if things had been going particularly well for them anyway, but I often reference this. Vicario gets booked with 20 minutes to go for time wasting. Now, I do take and buy all of your comments about like the poisonous nature of the club and the toxic nature and all that sort of stuff. But what is going on? Like, surely at some point or another, there has to be some personal responsibility. Maybe you would say that they haven't brought in players who have any level of personal responsibility, anybody who can show any, no Seamus Coleman's in the dressing room.
Well, that was Harry Kane, carried that mantle for years, and Son and these types of players, and the Dutch defenders. Lloris, Vertonghen, and the Belgian Alderweireld. Mm. But Harry Kane was a spiritual leader. Scored a hat trick for Bayern Munich last night in the German Cup. He's, he's been made the right decision to get out of the club. But I think De Zerbi, to be fair, has brought. I mean, the Villa game, the Wolves game, there was fight, there was spirit. The Brighton game at home, there was spirit. So I think that has. But that it could come to this is a damning indictment. And unfortunately, the way it is, players will just go, you know what? I'll get a move.
What do you think is going to happen?
I think Tottenham can't concede first. If they don't concede first, they're okay. But I think if they concede first, it could all collapse.
Even if West Ham score first, as you say, the transistors will be on, and that word will filter through, and the nerves will start to emanate into the stadium.
Leeds are on the beach, right? Yeah. And Everton, Moyes, his former club, wants to keep his former club up. They're tricky. Dewsbury Hall, these types of players. Ugh. Seamus Coleman to score a winner at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Come 6 o'clock this evening.
I've never been alive. I'm not young. 1977 was the last time Spurs were relegated. So It would be pretty. Well, I'll be on air and obviously be very objective and I'll be talking about Arsenal.
No, you won't.
Crying during the ad break.
What do you think of your forecast in your head?
I think they'll just scrape it, but it won't be okay. Because of them. It'll because of circumstance, because of West Ham haven't been good enough either.
Okay.
There's a macabre curiosity among neutrals who want to see Spurs go down. Same way people wanted to see Arsenal maybe falter from the position
but
they were in.
It fits the narrative that's been going for decades now with Spurs being flaky and just they're going to crumble. They'll always let you down. This is a club that was the first English club to win the double, that won 11 trophies between 1961 and 1984. British club to win a European trophy. Were robbed in a European Cup semi-final. And you had Jimmy Greaves. I mean, I was watching a Gascoigne documentary during the week, Gascoigne, Lineker, played the game in a really positive, beautiful way. And that's why they had their position in the game. And as I said, 9 years ago, 7 years ago, Tottenham were in a Champions League final.
Mm.
But you're never too big to fail. Look at Leicester City.
Yeah.
Look at Leeds, Villa, Manchester City, Newcastle. They've all been in the second tier at some stage.
Doesn't feel like any of those, you'd have to go and analyse it, but off the top of my head, that any of those clubs were as well backed as, none of them were on the Deloitte at that time.
Yeah.
Obviously, subsequently, money came in with some of them.
But that is almost like a fake. Look, obviously, it's a real figure, but it's an edifice because it's a value of something that could be and something that's like really won from a business perspective. But if the football collapses, the whole thing collapses because they haven't prioritised the football. And then you become an entertainment hub. You become a leisure industry.
There's no party
club a part of it.
Said to yourself, this could be getting relegated.
Absolutely. If the club was sold, but they're not. Why would they sell the club when they've just lost the value of their investment?
Bad timing, yeah.
But if they stayed up and sold, the best thing that ever happened to Spurs. Okay. Best thing that ever happened.
If you ever want an indication of how quickly football moves, like I was there in Bilbao when Spurs won the Europa League final last year, and Ange Postecoglou, I remember on the back of the bus saying, you thought season two was good, season three is, or was it season one and season two, whatever it was, and he was looking ahead to the next season. And little did you know, like they've had what, two managers since him?
Dejan Kulusevski there's been a lot of managers he hasn't even met because he's been injured for all of it.
Yeah.
So, look, we got the live commentary today and we'll see what happens. Spurs-Everton with Feligan and Owen Doyle, but at least we've got some drama.
Some drama, for sure. So keep your eyes peeled for that one later on and your ears tuned. 4 o'clock is the start time for all of those games. Some drama in the Gaelic football yesterday because defending All-Ireland champions Kerry suffered a round one defeat to Donegal in Killarney yesterday afternoon. Last year's runners-up defeated the Kingdom by 2 goals and 20 points, excuse me, to 16 points with Kieran Murr and Shane Malone grabbing the goals for Jim McGuinness aside. A key turning point in the game was the sending off of Kerry's Micheál Burns for an apparent strike on Donegal's Ryan McHugh as the teams were leaving the pitch at half-time. A melee ensued with quite a number of players and coaching staff involved. Off the Ball's Gaelic Games correspondent Tommy Rooney asked Donegal boss Jim McGuinness about it at the press conference afterwards.
Jim, half-time probably covers a lot of what happened obviously in the second half. It was carnage out there. You seemed to be close enough to the incident with Ryan McHugh that led to Micheál Burns' red card. And
yeah. Well, I wasn't close to the incident, but...
What did you see or what happened then?
I didn't see anything, to be honest with you. I didn't see anything, but listen, it is what it is. You know, there's a strike and he split and people are not happy that once your players get split, people are not going to be happy. That's just the bottom line, you know. So it was dealt with by the referee.
Yeah, we obviously saw Jared Brennan getting a ban for being involved, manager team and obviously the GAA really didn't help you with it. Are you worried about...
Are you trying to get me a ban, Tommy? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not, but we all...
Well, what are you saying it for then?
Well, it was televised, Jim, on GA Plus. Like, it's all
right
here.
Okay. So you're...
Well, I'm not. I'm asking you.
You're flying that kite, are you?
No, it's a pretty straightforward question.
No, it's not, really.
Can we keep it to the...
It's not really, Tommy.
It's hard not to talk about it.
Well, we are talking about it, like, but you're not talking about the incident. You're talking about the fact that... Well, that out of 50 people, you're finger-pointing me. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not finger pointing at you.
There's 50 people in the pitch there.
There's a very clear rule that Jared Brennan got banned for, and it's minimal interference, which can be next to nothing.
Right, okay.
And it's obviously quite penal.
That's good enough. Well, sure, good. You've done your job, Tommy.
You've done your job,
fair enough. You've done your job. You've asked the question you wanted to ask.
I'll just read out the official guide of the GA section 7.2 under the section dealing with misconduct at games by team officials consists of 5 categories of infractions which occur on or in the vicinity of the field of play and which occur immediately before, during or after a game. Category 4A, 1 and 2, minor physical interference with, e.g. laying a hand on, pushing, pulling or jostling, threatening or abusive conduct towards or threatening language to a referee, a score umpire, line umpire or sideline official. and any type of physical interference with an opposing player or team official penalties, one minimum 12-week suspension in all codes and at all levels. It appears that Jim McGuinness did push Dermot O'Connor during the match.
Yeah. I think that it'd be very much on the lower end of what you've described there to begin with. I think clearly it shouldn't have happened, and I think clearly he probably should have come out yesterday and accepted that and helped people move on with life. I know the Ger Brennan comparison is entirely relevant, but it's also different. So the incident shouldn't have happened, and let's establish that and acknowledge that. But I think after that, there are other factors at play. Namely, first of all, you can't actually see the push, certainly from the angles I've been looking at. It's pretty obvious. You can deduce that it happened. You can see his arms going out, but there's somebody between the things, so you can't actually see the push. And then obviously Dermot O'Connor steps back. He assumes, or he's got information, that Dermot O'Connor is the player who's punched Ryan McHugh, that's ended up with a massive gash on his face, like a shocking thing that he's ended up having to obviously get a lot of bandaging on, and doesn't start the second half because of. And I'm sure that bit, that bit is really the most egregious thing, I think, that happened yesterday, and deserves an awful lot more conversation. I know, I understand the reasons why it won't get that, but that's that. I also think it's slightly different from the Ger Brennan incident. In the Ger Brennan incident, somebody ends up on the ground, which is not the case here, so it might be seen as less egregious in that regard. And Ger Brennan got red carded, you remember, at the time, and that obviously isn't what happened yesterday. So I don't know what sort of the mitigation as well of, you know, seeing one of his players with a bloodied face, and, you know, the response that can come from that. I'm sure these are arguments, and I'm not Jim McGuinness's defence lawyer, but I'm sure these are things that mark it out as slightly different from Ger Brennan. Yes. All I'm saying is, it might be, I think it's not unreasonable to assume that, you know, it's going to go before the relevant authorities and they will look at it, but I'm not assuming necessarily that outcome. I wouldn't be astonished if that's what happened.
But he wasn't given a yellow or a red, and referee Sean Hurston did speak to McGuinness and Jack O'Connor at the start of the second half. So in his report, he could say that the matter has been dealt with. Now, the Central Competitions Control Committee can retrospectively apply sanctions. So the judgment of GA officialdom will be interesting given what happened to Brennan. But, I mean, Sean Hurston could just say in his report, this was dealt with. I spoke to the managers at the time. I didn't apply a red or a yellow. So there is a little bit of a difference.
There is, and I don't think it's cut and dry necessarily. Yes. You know, and also we've said it, it's become a cliche, the 12-week ban for Ger Brennan was too much, 12 weeks for that.
The rule is mad.
But yeah.
There's no nuance to the rule.
No nuance.
There's no common sense, and that's the issue here. And because people might see it as a precedent, then you've got a big talking point here. And
well, to be seen to be consistent,
yes,
is probably going to be the major weight on the scale here.
Yeah, that's what could potentially see Jim McGuinness in trouble, I think, because of the what happened with Ger Brennan. It's funny because elsewhere in that press conference, and I've listened to the full thing, Jim McGuinness is talking about not taking a step back, and you know, they knew it was going to be a physical game. And obviously, he was not happy with Tommy's line of questioning, but Tommy was perfectly entitled to approach that questioning in the way in which he did. And he didn't take a step back, in fairness to Tommy, as he shouldn't have done. You could sense that Jim McGuinness's tail was up, and he possibly knew a question was coming about the melee. And then once Tommy referenced the Ger Brennan thing, he just was not happy. You can see why people within Donegal see Jim McGuinness as this messianic figure, because it's all siege mentality. It's what are you coming at me asking that question for? Tommy was fully entitled to ask the question, and it was just an awkward exchange. It's box office, but it was an awkward exchange between the two of them. Fascinating to see what happens next, but it was just, we've seen it happen with Jim McGuinness before. Look, he's a fiery character, and that's why he's been so successful. But I think in this occasion, as Tommy referenced, the game was televised on GAA+. So Tommy was entitled to say, well, if in fact Jim McGuinness did shove Dermot O'Connor, I'm sure there will be other angles that'll come up.
It's not hard. It's not hard to find the footage of it. The question in itself won't be the reason why something happens.
Yeah.
Like, it was pretty obvious.
And I don't think Jim McGuinness should be banned for 12 weeks. Just the same way I didn't think Ger Brennan should be banned for 12 weeks, but he might be.
And if he is, this is the difference between potentially winning or losing the All-Ireland. Is Donegal season potentially up in smoke? That's why this is so critical.
Well, that will be interesting to see, because on Shane's point about like his presence and prowling up and down the sideline for sure. And Donegal, we should be sitting here today going, Donegal are bang on, odds on to win the All-Ireland, because they were bloody impressive.
First half, they were excellent. Now, I do think it's important as well to say that I watched the whole of the press conference, and Tommy did ask Jim another two questions
afterwards,
and Jim was perfectly straightforward and polite in the answers. But Jim has worked in the media. Jim has worked for Sky Sports. He's written for the Irish Times. He knows the show. He knows he's going to get questions, and Tommy is perfectly entitled to ask them.
Yeah.
I think at the passage of time, he will understand that, but he obviously went in to defend his corner, and that's how he defended it, I think.
And also, from a human perspective, not that you're condoning it, but if you're the manager of a team, you're protecting your players, you're there to protect your players, it's perfectly understandable that you're going to lose your cool if you see one of your players with blood running down his face. Not to excuse anything he might have did.
Well, I think, I'd be on that side of it, and then your point about the nuance.
Yeah.
Then it just doesn't come into it.
GA needs to write nuance into its rules.
Yeah.
Because it's really disrupted Dublin's season. And would Dublin be Leinster champions if Jared Brennan was there?
Yeah.
You will say no.
No chance. No. They might have been if Pádraig Coffey-Byrne was there. But.
The precedent is the awkward thing now, because I know you've mentioned the mitigating factors potentially, Adrian, as well. But if they're to follow the letter of what you read out, then he will be banned for 12 weeks. Otherwise, Jared Brennan is going to be sitting at home going, why might he not be
because he didn't get a sanction on the day, and the referee might say that he dealt with it in his report when he spoke to the parallel at the start of the second
They
half.
Might be able to find a way out if that's what they're looking for. Isn't that it?
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're not looking for that.
I don't think the GA will want to ban him for 12 weeks, because otherwise then this happens like every other week there's an incident like this. You have to be banning people for 12 weeks.
It was just nothing, right? Everybody accepts that the manager shouldn't be putting his hands on a player. Everybody accepts that. But this was nothing.
Mm, yeah. And not to speak for them, but I don't think Dermot O'Connor or Jack O'Connor would want Jimmy Guinness banned for that particular incident.
We've had this in the GA before for like different controversies, but you can remember the controversies there. Like Tony Keady or the Tony Keady affair, or Colin Lynch, remember being banned as well. And you don't want this to take over the summer.
No.
And that's where the rule book needs to get some nuance into it.
Well, and you're right. Because if Donegal were to go on to not win the All-Ireland because the messianic figure is not on the sideline, and it was because of that, I mean, you're a bit about siege mentality. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm suspicious. What's that expression about?
Yeah.
I'm paranoid, but they still might be following me.
Yeah. But there's moments that are missed. There's moments like, David Clifford was involved in a couple of very physical moments in the game yesterday.
Tommy, to be fair, it's before the game, he said, lads, this is going to get touchy, because the Michael Murphy incident.
In the league final,
there's probably a bit of a spillover from the atmosphere that was there that day and rolled into yesterday.
He got widely booed as well every time he was on the call.
Yeah.
It's a rivalry that's piping hot. I really wish we're not for legitimate reasons, but, what was going on in the pitch, certainly not the box, and that definitely deserves front and centre attention, but or that other incident. But I just feel the bubbling over nature of this rivalry is a thing to behold for the next while.
There's a couple of things out of this as well. It seems like under the new rules, if you lose a player, you're gone. You're really up against it. And the second thing is, Kerry have only got one more chance now.
Mm.
They're a last chance saloon. Kerry now are into knockout situations.
But you fancy them again. Oh, listen, Meath fans would say, just watch back what happened 12 months ago, and you'd say, fair enough, but, Meath are in there now, Kildare are in there, one or Westmeath, the Cavan will be in there. Most probably, my view would be that Tyrone will be in there after today. Like, there'll be teams also that Kerry will fancy a pop-off. Not that they'll ever say that, but they're teams that they should be beating.
So it's an open draw. Kerry might have to go up to Omagh.
Monaghan will be in there.
The loser of Monaghan Mayo will be in there. Yeah, there's some nasty teams. But this is the thing. As you say, it's do or die for Kerry next day out.
This is Off the Ball Sunday News Talk. It's John Duggan, Shane Hannan and Adrian Barry on the News Round.
Yeah, we mentioned Kerry, and speaking afterwards, their boss, Jack O'Connor, also gave his assessment of a poor performance from his side, although the red card, of course, at halftime changed the game completely. And he spoke to media, including Tommy Rooney, for Off the Ball afterwards.
He was just on about the multi-men on the sideline there. He was just talking about just having limited people, just the medical on the sideline, along with the coach. And he said, that's all, there's nothing to do with it. I don't think either of us were stuck in the shemazin.
Jack, with the tone sort of set before the game, I think a couple of Kerry boys met Michael Murphy before the throw-in, and the referee threw the ball in and let the game go on from there, so that was kind of building across the first half.
I didn't see, I was watching the throw-in, I didn't see that time. Yes.
Are you concerned about repercussions from the game, you know, in terms of that half-time schmozzle?
What do you mean?
Like? I mean, like, will there be sort of evidence brought up about any of the players or anybody?
Sure, I thought the referee dealt with it. He dished out a couple of cards.
That's the end of it then?
I have no idea. I wasn't refing the game, like. No idea.
Being down a man in the second half, obviously, completely changed, you know, the tone of the game. Anytime you tried to press out, it's very difficult, obviously, in getting football nowadays. Were you disappointed with how you handled that man less in the second half?
Yeah, look. We got a very athletic team, and they move the ball around well, and they stress you even when you even numbers, when you're down a number or down a man, that's exacerbated then. So I thought that was the story, really.
Jack, did you know when you were in that time that
Mihal
was going to
be
back up?
No.
That's Jack O'Connor there.
Yeah, it's interesting the way they didn't know during their halftime team talk that Mihal Burns was going to be sent off. They came back out to the pitch.
That's an interesting one, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so they couldn't plan for it.
Yeah.
The team talk will be completely different if you're told Mihal Burns has been sent off. But
They must have had it in the back of their mind also, let's see what happens.
Gone. Yeah.
You go out there and go into the far corner of the pitch.
Yeah. It kind of ruined the game to a degree, although Mihal Burns deservedly sent off for the video we've seen of the strike on Ryan McHugh. But 5-point lead for Donegal at halftime didn't feel like much with the wind down there. Sending off just changed it completely. And Donegal comfortably able to pull away, and Tony Brosnan, I think, scores a 2-pointer in the second half, gives it the big one, and it was their first score for a bit of time, Kerry, but just wasn't enough. And I don't think they'll be too disappointed, Kerry, but they need to get lads back from injury.
They're
very quickly.
Though. They're a knockout now.
Yeah. 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 And you can find yourself out of the championship.
Oh, they looked good yesterday, I have to say.
They did. They beat Kildare 3 goals and 21 points to 17 points in the last of yesterday evening's fixtures. Cian Darcy, Matthew Tierney and Rob Finnerty found the back of the net for the tribesmen in that game, and some really, really top performances, particularly from Finnerty. 1 goal and 9 points for him. Shane Walsh with 6 points as well for the tribesmen. So really, really solid.
Homer off the bench as well. Oh. Galway are looking slick now. Like, you will caveat it and say Kildare probably not having a vintage year, and maybe there is a little bit of that, but like, let's not forget that they were a whisker within of winning the Connacht title as well, so they weren't a million miles off it there.
It's also quite likely that the teams that win these round one games, the winner of the All-Ireland will be among them, because you have a three-week break, I think, until your next game, and if you win that, you're into the All-Ireland quarterfinal. You have 2 weeks before that, so in terms of rest and
well, it's just one extra game for whoever has to go the other route,
the next
and
route.
Maybe it'll just depend who's in there. The biggest indicator might be that, you know, if you're over that way, you've been beaten.
Yeah, true.
As opposed to the weeks. I don't know. Like, I mean, you could argue that it sharpen up your game.
Possibly. Yeah, get a couple of wins on the trot, potentially.
So that's you ruling Kerry out of the win of the All-Ireland chain, is what I'm saying here.
I mean, Kerry need to get fellas back from injury very, very quickly. If they can get a full squad together, then...
And they have some coming back that obviously just a bit of more sharp fitness, but like sharpness coming back from injury. But, you know, the way that Paddy and David weren't allowed the space that they were in the All-Ireland final last year, and the kick-out strategy, like, these are things that are probably the most important factors to come out of that game, and they'll get very little conversation given events.
Well done to Cork as well.
Oh yeah, 14-man Cork beating Meath at Páirc Uaireann. The Rebels had trailed by 8 points at the break, but a spirited second half saw them book their place in the next round. Cork 30 points, Meath 1 goal and 24 points was the full-time score. And speaking of incredible individual displays, St Finbar's Stephen Sherlock with 14 points, including some incredible two-pointers for them in that one. And an absolutely cracking game, it appeared by all accounts. Watch the highlights back last night, and Cork will be tough to beat from any team, I think.
Roscommon on the high from the Connacht title win, welcoming Tyrone to Dr. Hyde Park for a 2 o'clock throw-in today in the Football Championship round one. Some sad news, though, ahead of this game.
Yeah, sad news ahead of this one from the world of G. A moment's silence will take place before the Roscommon Tyrone All-Ireland Senior Football Championship round one game at Dr. Hyde Park this afternoon, because the Tyrone GAA legend Frank McGuigan has passed away at the age of 71. The Ardbo clubman won 2 Ulster titles, captaining his county to the 1973 provincial final at the age of just 19 when they hammered down in Clonus. He scored 11 points in what became known as the Frank McGuigan final in Ulster against Armagh in 1984. His sons Brian, Tommy and Frank Jr. of course helped Tyrone to finally end their wait for the Sam Maguire in 2003. A statement from his club Ardbo today read, "Known affectionately across Tyrone and beyond simply as the King, Frank was a genius of a footballer who commanded the respect and admiration of the entire GAA fraternity, both at home and abroad. Through his brilliance, humility and love for Gaelic games, he truly put our great club on the map and inspired generations of players who followed. The King has left the field, but his legacy will live forever in Arbeau and Tyrone.
Yes, may he rest in peace, and our condolences are with Frank's family and friends today.
An incredible story, Frank McGuigan as well. He spent a lot of time over in the States, and his career was cut short after a horrific road accident many years ago. And he's spoken in podcasts and in interviews in recent years about the impact that had on his mental health, and he turned to alcoholism for quite some time. He had a serious heart attack last year. But yeah, an absolute legend in GAA circles in Tyrone. And yeah, may he rest in peace. Thoughts of his family and friends this afternoon. We'll mention the other GAA that is taking place today as well. The Hurling. Cork and top the group in the Munster Hurling Championship round robin this afternoon. They face Clare from 4 o'clock, who will also need a win to have any chance of making this year's final. That may not be enough if Limerick defeat Tipperary, with that game also down for a 4 p.m. throw-in at the TUS Gaelic grounds. In Leinster, Dublin will look to defeat Kilkenny in a provincial championship tie for the first time in over a decade from 2 p.m. at Parnell Park. Elsewhere, Offaly will be hoping to take third place if they can get past Kildare. That game is at St Connolly's Park in Newbridge from 2 o'clock, and Wexford also taking on Galway at Chadwick's Wexford Park from 2 p.m. today as well. There are some games in the Joe McDonagh Cup already underway, ongoing from 1 p.m. London 8 points, Laois 14 points. It's Antrim 2-14, Carlow 8 points. Down 1-11, Westmeath 9 points. All latest scores in the Joe McDonagh Cup. While to mention the other fixtures today in the ladies, Munster Football Championship, Waterford will be hoping to dethrone Kerry, while in Ulster, defending champions Armagh take on Tyrone. Both of those finals get underway from 2 p.m. While there is Tailteann Cup action as well to speak of today, some games currently ongoing. Waterford 7 points, Sligo 14 points. Fermanagh leading Wexford by 9 points to 3. Antrim take on Tipperary in round 2A from 3:15 p.m. as well this afternoon. While yesterday's results in the Tailteann Cup, Offaly beating Down, a great result for Offaly, 3:22 to 1:20 at O'Connor Park. London 1:14, Laois 1:29, and in round 2B it finished Clare 1:18, Longford 2:17, a big win for Longford over Clare footballers. Wicklow 4:17, Limerick 2:14, and Leitrim 22 points, Carlow 1:13.
1996 is the last time Kilkenny were not involved in the All-Ireland Series. Seismic game against the Dubs today at Parnell.
Yeah, stand at their game against Offaly a couple of weeks ago in O'Connor Park, and yeah, they were very flat looking. TJ was very flat looking and like came off an awful long time before the full time whistle was gone, and like that'd be a concern for them, but they just haven't looked like Kilkenny, I suppose, the thing, isn't it? And I don't know what the odds are today, but must be a pretty 50-50 situation.
Yeah, one win since 1942 for the Dubs against Kilkenny in the championship.
Why?
So there's a lot, and awfully, look, they'll be hoping that they'll get their work done today and that maybe fortune will favour them like West Ham.
Do you fancy Clare to get a result at Páirc Uí Chaoimh today?
Well, they got to do by four at least, but Cork a lot of injuries, and I'm impressed by some of these new players in the Clare forward line, like Dermot Stritch, Sean Rinn. They got a chance. Clare want a Munster title more than Cork too, because Clare haven't won one since 1998. And Cork will want to regroup and get their players fit for the All-Ireland Series, as many as they can.
Should we move on to the rugby? Because there's a bit to discuss there. Let's move on. Yep. Leinster suffered a fifth consecutive defeat in the European Rugby Union finals. They lost 41-19 to Bordeaux in the Investec European Champions Cup final yesterday. Their opponents scored 5 tries on their way to retaining the trophy in Bilbao. A French side have now won the competition 6 times in a row. Leinster head coach Leo Cullen spoke with Susanna Mullen for Off the Ball after the game.
Yeah, listen, the group have done incredibly well during the course of this season, and they've done lots of great things during the course of the game. It's hugely frustrating that we've, you know, not been able to exploit some of the opportunities that were created and not quite accurate at certain times during the game. And yes, and huge credit to Bordeaux, because they were incredibly clinical in terms of taking the opportunities that they have. So listen, it's frustrating, we're disappointed, but we need to just, yeah, like, there's also trying to enjoy the moment of being part of an incredibly special occasion. So, and that's what I've said to the group inside there. So anyway, it's, yeah, what's done is done, as we know. It's disappointing, but listen, many thanks to the people that travelled here. Like, it's been an incredible weekend for us as a team. When you look around the city of Bilbao and seeing so many Leinster flags, jerseys, people supporting, I know everyone involved in the team will have their own personal story of people that are here for them to support them. So, and I know from my own point of view, so many friends, family and all the rest that are here, and yeah, listen, we're good at that we couldn't get a better outcome, but listen, we're hugely proud of, I think being part of a pretty amazing occasion here today.
Five tries, obviously, for Bordeaux in that first half. When you look back at it, a much better second half performance, but what went wrong in the opening 40?
We give them so many soft scores, really. There's intercept before half time. You know, there's a chip over the top, which we don't quite deal with. Again, breaking ball that they score. You know, so, and listen, like, the game is like, listen, it finishes five tries to three in the game. Obviously, you know, they kick a couple of penalties, which we turn around shot after shot, and, you know, we don't quite execute when we go to the corner a few times. And it just, unfortunately, it's just been, it's too expensive for us. So you need to be clinical when you come to these big games against top teams. And unfortunately for us, we weren't quite clinical enough on the day.
Leinster's heaviest defeat in a Champions Cup final, and they've now lost five on the bounce.
Tough going. Best team by far won the game. Like, you get into analysing it now till the cows come home, and we'll do that, and I'm sure it'll continue for the next while. But very difficult to see a way, regardless of who's coaching that team or what defensive tactics they're playing, that you could beat that Bordeaux side there. Geez, pretty exciting time to be a Bordeaux fan. Bernard Jackman must point in one of the papers today that, like, they're a young, hungry side. They've won two in a row. You wouldn't back against them doing three in a row. I don't know. I felt, funny enough, even when Leinster got that Tommy O'Brien try and they went seven up, you knew there was a wave coming. All Bordeaux forward ball all day long was all forward ball. Like, it was very difficult to put them at the back foot to make a big challenge, to try and get an intercept. Like, they were kicking forward, they were carrying forward, they were offloading. It was all forward momentum. Like, it was a juggernaut and it was nigh on impossible to stop it. But yeah, Leinster lose a line out. Remember, even before that, Cameron Wachey, no try, he goes over in the corner, I think would have made it was either 7-all or 14-7 to Bordeaux at that time. Leinster had lost a line out in the lead into that. Looked like an exceptionally complex line out with loads of movement in it, and that continued over the course of the day, and it just was indicative almost of their day in that it was way too complex. They probably needed to simplify things a little bit, but Leinster were 21-7 down, John, and I was thinking, this isn't an insurmountable lead in any way, shape or form.
This one, they had the pick and posts.
For this Leinster team. After Bordeaux got their third try, but my thought wasn't that Leinster couldn't catch them. They definitely could, but there was no way they could stop them from scoring more. And the jig was up, you know? And I definitely think you can have a few gripes. There was a moment where one of the Bordeaux forwards is in, going for a jackal. He's on one knee before he gets into the position to jackal at all. He continues to jackal. He takes the ball back, still on one knee, and presents it back. That Louis Bielbury try just before half-time that puts the game absolutely out of sight. There's a push, clear push on the back of Jameson Gibson-Park in the lead into that. It should have been 100% a penalty to Leinster. But you couldn't use any of that as reasons to suggest if those things hadn't have happened, Leinster might have won the game. There's no scenario, and that's probably the most comforting and depressing thing all in once, that there was no scenario where Leinster
something
needs won
to
it.
Change, though, in Leinster. Does something need to change?
Just something. I don't know the answer to that. Leo Cullen has done, which is what you're talking about.
Well, it's not a Leo Cullen this or Jack Nienab or that. It's just that you have the debate, because it just feels, if you're talking about Hamer Hogrimsson here or Stephen Kenny or Arne Slot or Ruben Amrim, it would be straight down the middle.
Yeah, but the difference is, John, that Stephen Kenny or whoever else hasn't been putting Ireland in a position to win games and not to win trophies, and neither is Ruben Amrim It's... That's the bit. I don't know the answer to that question. Has it been unbelievable success that Leinster have got that number of finals and semi-finals and come to within so many whiskers? It would have been 17-0 up, was it, in the Aviva against La Rochelle a couple of years ago, after whatever it was, 10 or 15 minutes, and eventually found a way to, or La Rochelle found a way to win it. Is that ultimately, and I'd be more, my general personality would be to think that that is more of a success than it is failure. Or is the failure that they haven't managed to get over the line?
That's the debate, isn't it?
I don't know the answer to it. Like, because, you know, be careful what you wish for. We were discussing, you mentioned David Moyes and West Ham earlier. Yes. There can be a rush for change. And who the hell knows what happens?
Well, look at Ulster, not even in the Champions Cup next season. Mm-hmm. Munster are probably going through the worst phase in their history as a professional outfit. Leinster did reach a final. I just wonder sometimes how seriously the English clubs take the Champions Cup.
Mm.
And we talk about quality. This is the Irish team. Pretty much the Irish team, Enrico Ioane.
And look what happened in the Six Nations against France. So, you know, there are parallels there.
Like, I think France is going to win the World Cup. And people don't agree with me, whatever. But I think France, the amount of quality coming out of France and the amount of depth coming out of France. And you do think about the cycle of back to the Lions and the Six Nations and all these players carrying all that. And then they reach a final in May in a hot day in Bilbao. And it almost is like an Irish team going to France in the 90s and 2000s. And they just get steamrolled. And that's what happened yesterday. So,
the only consolation for us all, John, is that Bordeaux and Montpellier are not in the URC. That's if we're looking for crumbs of comfort today, we don't have to play them every week. But like, listen, there was an Irish angle, obviously, on the whole thing.
No, McNamara
got the job done, and like, that was great to see. Very unlikely journey from a teacher. It was a Dan Sheehan's maths teacher when he was a young fella.
Black Rock, was it?
And he failed his maths exam, I think, by all accounts. seemed to be the thing, the line that was going around. But yeah, what he's done has been absolutely incredible. Obviously, was in the Irish system for a time. I think there'll be a desire now, as it was with Ronan O'Gara, obviously, when he was having his success as well, to see, and I don't think it'll be a next year or the year after conversation, but to see how we get him back.
I think the thing with Leinster is there's so much talent in Leinster, and they're so efficient at getting to a certain point that you can, it'd be very surprising if Leinster are not around the business end of the Champions Cup again next season, semi-finals, finals. But it's just, what is that extra ingredient that they need to become champions again, is the question. What else we got to finish the news round here?
Just briefly mention a couple of bits. George Russell will lead the charge at the Canadian Grand Prix later on today. The Mercedes driver secured pole position ahead of his teammate Kimi Antonelli. McLaren's Lando Norris behind them, with his colleague Oscar Piastri also on the second row. Lights out in Montreal at 9 p.m. tonight. Golf shims, power looks out of the running. Heading into the final date, the Byron Nelson, the Waterford golfer, finished level par after a frustrating third round at TPC Craig Ranch. He'll be back on the course from 3:30 this afternoon. World number one Scotty Scheffler is in contention. He's two shots off the leader, Siwoo Kim, alongside Wyndham Clark. And we'll finish there.
1,000 guineas as well at the Curragh today. Briefly, Adrian, you've got Hugh Farrelly and Cliona Foley on the papers. That's already recorded. We're going to play out a bit on the FM this evening, but what was the flavour of the writing today?
Loads of coverage around the GA, loads of coverage around the rugby. So we've mentioned all of that, and we get into it in the Sunday paper review with the two guys you mentioned. Lots of Pep retrospective, as you can well imagine. James Ducker piece in the Sunday Independent was very good. Some nice stuff from Ilkay Gundogan in that. 4-0 up against Sporting Lisbon in a Champions League last 16 game a few years ago. First leg of it, they're 4-0 up at halftime, and he rips them at halftime about their attention to detail and how, you know, taking the foot off the gas in the way that they're doing is not going to see them through the next round. It gives you a bit of an insight into him. A good one from David Walsh, the back page of the Sunday Times. Pep gave entire being to City. This was a season too far. Tells a great anecdote, if we have 30 seconds to do this one. David Walsh goes to interview Eric Cantona about 20 years ago. And he says that he couldn't have been more charming. Dave Walsh says, at the end of the interview, I did something that I'd never done before and I would never do again. At the time, I was looking after Comberton Crusaders under-16 football team in Cambridgeshire. And our talented centre-forward, Daniel Stewart, was devoted to Manchester United and enthralled to Cantona. Against my better judgment, I bought a United replica shirt before the interview, and then I brought it. And after switching off the tape, I pulled out the shirt and handed Cantona a pen. Eric, I asked, would you mind signing this for a kid who plays centre-forward in a team I look after? First, he said, you must tell me about this boy. He's 16, I said, talented, but hot-headed. He's very skillful, but often gets in trouble with the referee. I see, Cantona said, telling me with a nod of his head that I'd said enough. He wrote, now do remember that this boy is a 15-year-old, whatever it is, Cambridgeshire footballer. Daniel, when you no longer feel the passion, you must stop. Eric Cantona.
Vive la défense.
It's obviously used as an analogy for Pep Guardiola, but the idea that Eric Cantona was saying this to a 15-year-old boy about no longer feeling the passion, I don't think that was quite, it's not how David Walsh is positioning the piece, by the way, but there's loads of good stuff about Pep across the papers. In fact, possibly more than there is about Arsenal, funny enough. The only other piece that I mentioned, JD, and loads in the papers today, Philip Lanigan's feature interview with the head of hurling, William Maher. I'm not in the conversation on what games are shown on TV. There's a load in it, a lot of detail, a lot of it about like how we move from what he says are 1,600 plus clubs throughout the country. He says, I think it's nearly 800 with hurling. There's a big bridge to be bridged there. And he talks about stuff like dual club nurseries. So you play until you're whatever it might be, six or seven, and you have to play dual code because they're both in the same session. But my question would be, what happens after that? Like, basically, you have a lot of kids, even by the age of seven, who training has gone single code. They can choose to go one day and not the next. Same for goal games. Like, from the age of seven, it's very young to be already facilitating a situation where you can give up hurling, and they do.
Yes or no, does Spurs stay up?
Hopefully not. No.
I'm going to say no, John.
Good luck. Get out of here. Get out of the studio. Adrian Barry and Shane Hannon, thank you for the news round here on Off the Ball. Sunday News Talk. We're going to keep you updated on everything between now and seven. We have the Spurs Everton commentary to come. Kevin Coban, Johnny Ward, Stephen Dodd and Brian Kerr as well on the final day of the Premier League season, recapping on the beautiful game for the last 9 months. Our coverage continues after this.